Welcome back to What Do You Want to Watch, the show hosted by myself, Nathan English, and
David Dirks.
And David and I just got done researching spiders in the Amazon, but we're back because we have to talk about the Oscars. Another Madam Web joke. Did anybody see that movie? No. But it was mentioned three times at the Academy Awards. A lot of other things happened at the Academy Awards too, including David's favorite movie winning a lot of Oscars. But also losing some, which he was upset about every time it lost one, and made sure to text everybody about it. John Cena was naked. The show was under 3.5 hours, and overall, I thought it was a pretty good year for the Oscars. We're going to talk about all of it. Maybe John Cena being naked will lead, but I'm sure we'll get to everything else too. So stick around for that.
Please do that.
All right, David, the 96th Academy Awards took place this last Sunday. We are recording this on Tuesday afternoon. First, let's just get it out of the way. Best Picture went to Oppenheimer, an inevitability, I would say. I think anybody that has been really paying attention to the awards season, and there are a lot of precursors, and I don't really watch any of them. I just see the results from them. I think everybody knew this was going to happen. It was pretty set in stone. This wasn't a surprise. But I know that, one, this was your favorite movie of last year, as it was mine as well. But also, this is your favorite director. And this is Christopher Nolan's first best picture win. He also won an Oscar for Best Director at this Academy Awards as well. What was it like just being such a huge fan of this movie to see it win?
Yeah, it was a very big relief. I follow a... like Christopher Nolan, like I guess fan page. Like I just do like one main one that has quite a bit of following.
Trying to sound less creepy right now. Good job. Yeah, it's working.
Well, like they have like some inside information, or like, oh, Chris is reportedly working on his next movie. Like different stuff like that I wouldn't necessarily know. But they were like, this is for Dark Knight. This is for Inception. This is for Memento. So it's kind of like, I mean, I think we both agree. Like Chris has had some pretty blockbuster, pretty impressive films that. Mm-hmm. Maybe felt like they didn't get recognized like they should have, or maybe they just didn't, and maybe it was the way it should have been. But the talent that Chris has and what he's been able to make, it feels like, okay, his 11th feature film, he finally got not only his first Oscar win, but he also got a Best Picture win. So it's kind of like a big sigh of relief of like, okay, like finally, you know. Because, you know, everybody has their opinions. Me personally, I feel like he should have won a directing or something, you know, Oscar. Prior to whatever it would be, whether it's Memento or Dunkirk or Interstellar, Inception, name them, like they're all impressive films. So it was just cool to see that. And I didn't want to get my hopes up, but I think when Killian won Best Actor, I think that was its fifth one. Mm-hmm. I was like, I think this is probably going to win Best Picture. Like you kind of have that feeling, like it's like Oppenheimer. And Oppenheimer. You kind of get that idea. And then once Christopher won Best Director, which is the third to last one announced, I was like, okay, like I'd be very surprised if Oppenheimer didn't win this. No, it was just really cool to see that. It was a fun night.
And I think what's good about this is it's oftentimes we see with the Academy, it feels like we get it's time win. Which I think the go-to example for that just recently is Leo in The Revenant, right? Leonardo DiCaprio is one of the most celebrated actors of the late 20th and 21st century, is continually nominated but can't seem to win an Oscar. It becomes this like running joke and everything. And then he wins for The Revenant, a movie that I would say is pretty good, but I wouldn't put in an upper echelon in terms of Leo performances. It's a very physical performance, but I think he's better in, you know, The Wolf of Wall Street. And I think he's better in Titanic and The Departed. And there's several other movies. So
even Inception, he's exceptional.
Even Inception, he's very good in that movie. But Nolan, this isn't an it's time. That he's being crowned for possibly his greatest achievement, you know, which is very high praise considering the works of Christopher Nolan. And I just wanted to go back and look at some of the times where it seems like he was snubbed in a way and look and see whether he was actually snubbed. So this is one that's a real snub. I think Memento, movies of like that, like this, the smaller films that Nolan was making, Batman Begins, Insomnia, those were never really going to contend for Best Picture and weren't really considered in that echelon. They're still great movies, in my opinion, but they're just not on that level. The first one I think that he made this really on that level is The Dark Knight. And so that would have been the 2009 Academy Awards. David, I just want to see, can you tell me who the Best Picture nominees? There were only five. This is before they expanded it. Can you name any of the five Best Picture nominees? They moved it to
10 because Dark Knight was left off, right?
Right, exactly. So can you name for me the five Best Picture nominees that made it in ahead of The Dark Knight?
Let's see. There Will Be Blood. Is that the year before?
That's before.
God, that's 2008 year Academy. Oh, man. 2009.
There is a David Fincher movie that's nominated, but it's not one you would think.
It's not seven. Considered,
no, that's in the 90s. It's often considered David Fincher's one of his worst movies. It does have Brad Pitt in it.
I'm blanking. Okay. I'm trying to think. No, not Girl with a Dragon.
There's also a movie about a guy who goes on an incredible underdog run in a game show and wins a lot of money that I know you've seen.
Oh, dude, that's your Slumdog Millionaire one.
Yes, Slumdog Millionaire cleaned up at this Oscars. The other nominees, because right. I have not seen a couple of these movies. I doubt you have either. Milk, which is based on a true story about Harvey Milk, which netted Sean Penn a Best Actor win. We also have The Reader. Hands up if you've seen The Reader. No one has. I have seen Frost Nixon. I thought it was meh at best. I didn't think that was that much of an achievement cinematically. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button was the Fincher film that was nominated. There's some definitely cool sequences in that movie, but overall it's not really one of the beloved Fincher films. And then Slumdog Millionaire was obviously the winner. And so, you know, you're looking at that and you're thinking, what? I mean, those are some movies like The Dark Knight couldn't even crack that list there. That was a definite snub. I want to move fast forward to the year that Inception came out, which would have been the 2011 Oscars. So this is after they had expanded the Best Picture nominees because of The Dark Knight. Okay, so nominated this year, The King's Speech was the winner, which I think has just aged poorly. If I'm going to read off the rest of these movies to you, David, you're just going to be like, how did The King's Speech win? Okay, Black Swan, The Fighter, Inception, The Kids Are All Right, which is a movie I've not seen, 127 Hours, The Social Network, Toy Story 3, True Grit, and Winter's Bone. I would say, if you're being generous, The King's Speech is maybe the fourth or fifth best movie in that list. And so you could say Nolan was snubbed there.
How did King's Speech win that? I'm not like I'm a Nolan fan, but honestly, Social Network or Black Swan. Yeah. Or even The Fighter not win that? That's wild.
Yeah, that one's pretty crazy. And Tom Hooper won Best Director over Aronofsky, Fincher. Nolan wasn't even nominated for this. David O. Russell was nominated, and Joel and Ethan Coen. So Nolan was left off the list there. And then let's fast forward again to the Interstellar year, which I believe 16? Should be the 16 Oscars. So let's go ahead and look here and see the Best Picture nominees this year. Right? No, maybe it's is it the 15 Oscars?
It may not have been nominated.
No way. Did it not even get nominated? I'm looking here. So I don't see it on the list.
Oh, it is the 2015. I happen to see it in production design.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not now. I don't think it's nominated for Best Picture as I'm looking at the list. It is not. But it isn't. Just want to confirm it's in other categories. Yeah, original score, Hans Zimmer, nominee. Okay. So the 2015 Oscars, the winner of Best Picture was Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. An Iñárritu movie, which I think is impressive visually, but kind of a one-trick pony and falls apart for me in many respects. American Sniper, a movie I think is vastly overrated. Boyhood, Richard Linklater's movie that he took, I think, 15 years to make and actually filmed in like real time. Grand Budapest Hotel, which is excellent, maybe Wes's best. The Imitation Game, Selma, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. Interstellar not being on there, even as a guy who is not in love with Interstellar, is a noticeable miss. So all of that to say that there has been a history with Nolan, and that he wasn't always recognized. I think sometimes people do the everybody's against us thing when you're a fan of something. We did it as Chiefs fans. People do it in sports all the time. And so there was a little bit of that idea from Oppenheimer fans as we're moving closer and it becomes inevitability that everything's against us. Nobody ever recognizes Nolan. But there is credence to that argument. The Academy has not really recognized Christopher Nolan in any meaningful way until now. And I think that this might, I don't know if it'll open doors and he will continue to be recognized, because oftentimes, like, the movie that wins Best Picture is not the best movie of the year, which may not even be what Best Picture means to some of these people. But I think that happens more often than not, in my opinion. And we've had a couple of Best Picture wins. I'm thinking of Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody, are movies that in 10, 15 years, nobody will be watching. You know, they're not going to live on forever. I don't believe that's the case with Oppenheimer. I think that, it obviously won the major categories that we expected it to win: director, actor, supporting actor, and Best Picture. Also won numerous below the line categories, including cinematography and score. I think it deserved it. This is an Oscars where one movie was winning and dominating a lot of awards, and I think it was justified. And so I was pleased with, I think we ended up with the right result.
Yeah, I would agree. It was just nice to see that kind of the dominoes start to fall. We can get into this. I think, believe it or not, despite this discussion, I think I was honestly happiest for Robert Downey Jr. Because it kind of blew me away that was his first nomination and first win.
Well, it wasn't his first nomination. It was his first.
Or was that Killian?
It was Killian's first ever nomination. That's right. Win.
But I was just like, RDJ has never won an Oscar. Like, that's crazy to me. And I was just so happy he was able to get that. And he just seems like such a nice guy and a genuine guy. So that was honestly really probably very close ahead of Killian and Christopher, excuse me. I was really, really happy that RDJ got an Oscar. And it was well-deserved. So,
And I think what people will forget, and this is something that the generation above us knows, but we don't. I think most of my childhood, I haven't known RDJ other than, like, I was introduced to him as Iron Man, and then he was Sherlock Holmes, you know? And he's, like, been this kind of titan box office figure. He, for a long time, was a very heralded actor, but was more famous for his substance abuse issues, his issues with the law. He had a very dramatic fall from grace in the late 90s, and so this is kind of a lot. This is a long way. It's a long comeback. He was nominated for Best Actor in 1993 for his performances Charlie Chaplin in Chaplin, which there were a couple. Sam Rockwell made a joke about him learning to play the piano or the violin left-handed for that role, which is just ridiculous, a ridiculous amount of dedication. But he was heralded. He was one of the young up-and-coming actors who was going to be the next. Insert whoever you think is an all-time great actor. And then it seemed like that was all over. And Iron Man was in many ways his comeback. And now he's come from that all the way back around from, I think a lot of modern audiences would consider him mostly just a superhero guy to now he's won an Academy Award for acting. And we can qualm over whether he should have been nominated for supporting or maybe lead actor for his work as Iron Man in a couple of films. But I think it's really cool to see him come all the way back around. And we love a comeback story. And so it's really nice to see RDJ win. He was a little smarmy about it, but to be fair to him, he's won every single Best Supporting Actor award leading up to the Oscars for like the last 3 months. And so he knew it was going to happen. Everybody in the room knew it was going to happen. And it happened. So,
yeah, no, that's really cool to see. And then, of course, Killian, and we talked about Chris, all well deserved. And those are like the three I wanted. I think I wanted those three more than even Best Picture, because like those three guys have worked for so long, for so hard, and did so well. I'm like, they give it to them. Come on, you know. So yeah, it's a fun night.
Let's talk about some other awards. Not a lot of surprises, honestly, if we're looking at it. I think that maybe one of the – wasn't really a surprise. Something I enjoyed was the fact that The Zone of Interest did win Best Sound. Which you had texted me about immediately after, because you have not had the opportunity to see Zone of Interest yet. And you're asking me about it. That's a movie that relies entirely on sound. Like it's mostly background noise. It's mostly what drives the story forward is the careful attention to sound design, because without that sound, you are aware of what's going on, but there's, you're just watching, you know, a Nazi family essentially live throughout their daily lives with Auschwitz in the background. You can see things, but the sound, it's the sound of the ovens. It's the sound of the gunshots, the intermittent screaming that you can hear. Sometimes the screen would just go red and you'd hear like a loud blaring alarm sound just to kind of shock you at what you were seeing. It was a movie that was entirely built on sound. So while I think Oppenheimer's sound was genius, I think that the Academy got it right. And I was really happy that the Zone of Interest was recognized in that way.
Yeah, they played a clip in the nominees for sound, and one of those clips they played from Zone of Interest was like when the screaming was happening, and I was like, oh my gosh. It's like, I don't even know if I want to hear that right now, bro. That's crazy.
No. Ugh, it's so
I'm probably going to watch it. I don't like, it's one of these movies, like, I don't want to, but like, I'm going to. You know what I mean? Just because you know it's just such a heavy movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to watch like Wall-E afterwards to brighten my day. Well, that's actually kind of, I mean, Wall-E's not,
I'm trying to think,
necessarily a happy movie anyway, because the world, they don't take care of the world and everyone gets fat and they have to leave the planet because they trashed it.
Finding Nemo to, no. I don't know. We'll have to get back on that. We'll have to, we'll have to get back. Even, have to get back to you on that. I don't know.
Maybe The Incredibles, you know, like there's a little bit of chaos, but it ends the whole family dynamics together.
There you go. There you go. That's it. Zone of Interest is a very heavy film. I recommend it to everyone. I thought Jonathan Glazer gave a fantastic speech as well when he accepted the award for Best International Feature, which was, it was a shoe-in to win that. There honestly weren't that, like, outside of the Zone of Interest sound win, which I don't know that was really a surprise, there weren't that many surprises. I had a couple
that were, that if I had to pick surprises, it's not like I was like just like passed out in the living room. I was so ashamed. No, what this has kind of been talked about on Twitter, because it kind of started from this. How do you feel about Spider-Man not winning Best Animated?
I'm actually glad you brought this up,
because hey, I haven't seen Boy and the Heron. However, I do know that
Miyazaki
is a GOAT. I've not seen his movies, and I know he's a critically acclaimed filmmaker. So it's not like it was like a, wow, I can't believe the Green Book just won. But man, I feel like Across the Spider-Verse was like,
yeah,
whoa. You know what I mean? Like, should that have won?
I haven't seen The Boy and the Heron either. I tried to multiple times, just got inconvenient with the screening times and just could never really find out.
I think it's coming to Max. I saw.
Yeah, it is. I think it's supposed to come out this summer, so I'll have the opportunity to see it then. I'm just saying what I know based off of what I trust in people. I think people are overreacting this. I think that you are getting a section of Twitter, and this is not a bad thing, the section of Twitter that just watches the most popular blockbusters every year, and those are the films that they watch. And then when they see one of those that's great, like an Across the Spider-Verse, which is great, they immediately think that if that movie doesn't win, it's because the Academy doesn't care about what real people think and they're just highfalutin. And Miyazaki, watch Spirited Away. Like, and I'm not saying this in an aggravated way to you, but Miyazaki has been considered one of the best animated filmmakers of all time, maybe the best. And he has been consistently putting out hits since the 80s, like massive hits. Spirited Away is one of the most recognized animated movies ever. It's very good. My personal favorite is My Neighbor Totoro, which I saw in elementary school in class, and I've seen it multiple times since then, and I loved it. So I think that people are acting like some random Japanese indie movie that everybody wanted to be different about won over a Spider-Man movie, and that's why they're getting upset. And I don't think those people just have any sort of idea of what Miyazaki is and what he even means to the form. He's maybe the most important animator ever in terms of film. So I'm not surprised by it. I can't personally say that movie is better or or worse than Spider-Verse because I have not seen it. But I think that people overreacted way too much. And a night when Oppenheimer, the second biggest blockbuster of the year, won a bunch of awards, I don't think we need to act like the Academy doesn't care about what normal audiences like because they chose The Boy and the Heron over across Spider-Verse. And also, the first Into the Spider-Verse did win. And
that's right.
So there could be a little, do we need to award this again? There's also the fact that it is a sequel that is very obviously pointing to a third film in a way that I think I don't necessarily agree with this, but I would not argue with people that say it's kind of half a story. Because at least in a movie like Dune Part 2, for example, there is a coherent end to the story that we were setting up throughout the whole movie. Well, where we're setting up through the movie was a confrontation between the Harkonnens, the Emperor, and the Atreides and the Fremen. And we got that at the end of the movie, and that conflict was resolved. Now, there may be something else leading to it after that, but that was resolved. In Spider-Man, we don't really get that. The entire movie is about him trying to stop his Nexus event from happening or what. Is that what they... I don't remember if that's what they call it.
I can't remember. I feel like it's been forever now.
We don't ever see him get to do that, right or wrong. We don't see that end. And so I would understand if you're like, well, that's not necessarily a complete narrative. I'm not saying it wasn't entertaining, but it wasn't really a complete narrative. So I understand why this movie didn't win, even though I think in many ways it was superior to the first film. Because the first film was a complete narrative.
Yeah.
Beginning to end. It was a complete narrative. This one, I don't think it really is.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. I was bummed that Spider-Man didn't win, but then I was like, oh, I've not seen Boy and the Heron, so I don't think I can actually, you know, state a 100% opinion because I haven't seen the film that won. What sparked it, though, was the... I think the Miles Morales actor, he just tweeted robbed.
Yeah, sure.
And then the next day he like, you know, was like, hey, I thought we should have won, but I'm not, you know, he kind of apologized because I think he realized, I don't think he expected it to blow up the way it did. Because you have like half the people like, yeah, see, look, it was robbed. And then the other half like, why would you say that? You know, so he was like,
yeah, it's the guy in the movie thinks it's,
like, of course you're going to want...
I understand that. Yeah, of course he's going to want his own stuff to win. That doesn't lead credence to the argument. Well, the actress who was the lead in the film thinks that it should have won an award. So, of course, it should have won an award. Like, again, it wasn't like the Oscar went to Elemental, guys. Like, Miyazaki movie. Can we, like...
The surprise shouldn't be that The Boy and the Heron beat Spider-Man. The surprise should be that Elemental even made the animated feature list.
Yeah, I would have put that... the animated TMNT movie ahead of Elemental for sure.
The animation looked actually really cool in that. I never got to see the movie. It's on Prime, I think, but
yeah, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was amazing, but I thought it was solid.
Got you. Next thing, I got two more. And then if you have some, these might be the only ones that were kind of worth talking about. Adapted screenplay. Now this is another one. I've not seen American Fiction. I thought, Cord Jefferson had a really, really nice thing to say at his acceptance of winning.
Yeah, I think that was a really cool thing to say.
Absolutely. And I am biased in this, but I kind of felt like, especially with like, okay, Oppenheimer wins best picture and, you know, these director and the main actors are winning. Like, you would think that that would kind of be the shoe-in for, okay, well, it's going to win best adaptive screenplay if it's winning best picture. Is that, well, obviously it's not always the case, but
you got to look.
You've seen American Fiction, so what are your thoughts between the two?
I think that American Fiction is a very well-written movie. It's obviously based on a novel, which is what it's being adapted from. I think that there's multiple things at play here. One, I thought it was a great screenplay. I did, and I thought that the actors really brought to life the characters that were obviously very well-written by Cord Jefferson. Another is like this is. Adapted screenplay for me is a category where they're going to pick up. I feel like sometimes people might vote for a movie that they don't think is going to win anything else, which isn't bad, but they're like, Oppenheimer's already going to be recognized, you know? And so let's recognize this movie that is probably not going to be recognized anywhere else, even though we thought it was great. And so I think that could have played into it. I thought it was still a good screenplay. I personally would have chose Barbie and Oppenheimer over it. But I didn't have an issue with it winning. But I think that might be part of the case of this movie is not going to be recognized in any of the major categories like Best Picture, Best Director, best actor. It's just not, it's not going to win any of those. So it had a great screenplay. Let's recognize it for screenplay. Oppenheimer doesn't need this other win, you know?
Yeah.
I think that might be some of it.
I got you. And I did think it was cool that Sterling K. Brown got nominated for Best Supporting. I feel like he's been one of those like B-list. He's the best part of like, the movie. He's always in a bunch of like films or TV shows, you feel like, but you feel like just no one ever talks about him. So I was cool, like, oh yeah, like that's the guy for me. Like that's the guy from This Is Us, yeah, who's really, really good. And he's getting recognition. So that's cool.
He was the best part of American Fiction for me, easily.
That's awesome.
He's great.
That's awesome. Final thing that I have, and I'm curious if that's all or if you have a couple others, but the second to last announced award of the night, for me, is the best actress category. Emma Stone won for Poor Things.
Which Emma Stone didn't seem to be excited about. Whenever they read her name, first response, she just kind of grimaced. She went,
Twitter in the future flashed before her eyes. But I think we all were hoping, at least me, I was kind of hoping Lily Gladstone would win of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it sounds like maybe even she was surprised. Was that kind of a snub? Or I mean,
I wasn't shocked. I was rooting for Lily. I thought Emma would win. Emma, they kind of split a lot of the precursor awards. So it was really difficult. It was, from what we're being told, it's one of the tightest best actress races ever. Like
I heard that too.
Really down to the wire, and was really close. I think Emma Stone was good in Poor Things, although I didn't really enjoy that movie, which I have shared. I just didn't care for it. I thought Gladstone was transcendent in Killers of the Flower Moon. I think that entire epic rests on her, and just the what she has to do in that film, because it's very easy, the way that that narrative is structured, it's very easy for two things to happen. One, Lily to not be believable as a person who loves Ernest, who loves Leonardo DiCaprio's character, or two, Lily's character to look, Molly to look like she is just dumb and has no idea what's going on around her. And so Gladstone had to kind of weave this delicate balance between the two of having a clear mistrust of just Ernest and his people as a whole, but still being in love with Ernest. And she had to find a way to negotiate those two pretty complex ideas and mold them together in order to make that film work. Because if she leans too far one way or too far another way, in her performance, I feel like it just falls apart. The structure of the story falls apart. And so that's why I personally would have chose her. I thought that she was just great in it. And I don't think this would be a main factor when Academy voting, but Emma Stone's going to be there again. Emma Stone is one of the most recognized actresses in Hollywood. She is getting into the production game, as a producer on Poor Things, as a producer in a big TV show, The Search with Nathan Fielder, and is clearly becoming one of the more recognized and awarded individuals in Hollywood. Unfortunately for Lily Gladstone, she may not get another opportunity like this. I absolutely think she should. I mean, you can look at her talent, obvious talent in Killers of the Flower Moon. But before she was given that part, she was thinking about quitting acting altogether. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel makes a reference to this, that she was going to work for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you know? And so I just think that was such an obvious performance to award. And I understand, and I'm not taking anything away from Emma Stone, but I just think that you got to give that to Lily Gladstone. And also another thing, like Killers of the Flower Moon, double digit nominations, no wins again for a Scorsese movie. This happened to him with The Irishman too. I mean, he's the most nominated guy who never wins. It's insane. He continues to make these long epic films and can't win almost. And it's not, again, I'm not saying he should have won Best Picture. I would maybe make an argument for Best Director, although I have no problem with Nolan winning it, but he doesn't win any below the line categories, anything, you know? And I just think it's crazy that keeps happening to him. I don't think there's like a, you know, secret, whatever agreement that Academy voters have, that they'll nominate Scorsese, but they won't vote for him. I just think it just keeps happening to him. He just keeps running into buzzsaws year after year, and it's really difficult.
Do you think that is? I think there's two options to this. One, it's Martin Scorsese, so people are like, we're nominating his film, whether the movie is good or not. Now, the movie is usually good. Or do you just think it's like, that's unlucky? This year you hit Oppenheimer, you hit Poor Things, you hit Zone of Interest. When Irishman came out, we can look. I'm sure there was some, like, you know, you think that's just poor timing? Or do you think it's like, well, we have to nominate Martin Scorsese. And then when you compare like an Oppenheimer, it's like, well, it's not. You know what I mean? I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's a we have to, for sure. I think it's a we have to nominate Scorsese. Scorsese has been very open that he's not making movies for this purpose anymore. That he's kind of blasted the Academy in numerous recent interviews. And just the public, Scorsese's making movies for Martin Scorsese. He's been very clear about that. He's reaching what he feels like is the, he's reaching what he feels like is the end of his time. He's considered one of the great American directors. And so, yeah, he'll make a movie that's almost 4 hours long, even though everybody's complaining about the length of the movie, and they'll spend a bunch of money on it. And it's because he's going to do that because he's Martin Scorsese. And I don't have any problem with that. But I just think that that approach doesn't necessarily lend itself to winning awards. I think The Irishman was the same way. Like, that's a classic Scorsese movie, but he wants to use the same guys that he's used in movies previously. You know, he wants to have a touch with the past and Goodfellas, and it's a 3-hour Netflix movie. And for a lot of audiences, and we got to remember, like, Academy voters are like us. You know, they don't necessarily, whenever they look and see the Best Picture nominees and that one of them's 3.5 hours long, they're going to be like, I don't know how I feel about this. You know, I'm not really wanting to spend a whole evening doing this either, especially if it's, you know, Oppenheimer is a 3-hour movie that's pretty fast paced. I wouldn't say Killers of the Flower Moon was that. I would say Killers of the Flower Moon was excellent and one of my favorite movies of the year, but it takes a little bit slower work. Yeah. And so I think that that's definitely a factor, but I don't know that he cares at this point. I think he's probably fine.
Yeah, I would agree. I think one that, and I think even there might be, if he's been public, like, you know, I don't care about the Academy. We're all human. I wonder if there's a little bit of a, well, then you won't get our vote. Second, we know the movies this year. Dude, let me read Best Picture of 2020 Oscars. This is why he didn't win. Because I'll tell you, Parasite is the winner. Mm-hmm. That's a good pick.
Which should have won.
Ford versus Ferrari. You have The Irishman.
Excellent.
You have Jojo Rabbit. Mm. You have Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Excellent.
I mean, that's absolutely stacked.
I would say maybe at a minimum, 5 of those movies are considered classics.
Like, yeah. What a year for movies. That year was wild.
Well, and this year, you know, the crop of Best Picture nominees this year, I think we forget how good that was too, because I mean, it was Oppenheimer's the whole way, so it wasn't really much of a conversation. But if you look at Best Picture, American Fiction was very solid. Anatomy of Fall, I thought, was great. Barbie, I thought, was great. The Holdovers, I thought, was really good. Except there's now some controversy with The Holdovers, which we can get to in a minute. Killers of the Flower Moon, great. Maestro, yeah. Past Lives, great. Poor Things, a lot of other people loved it. I didn't. And Zone of Interest, I thought, was great, too. I mean, I thought we had a lot of good choices. It was just, there was one at the top, and there had been one at the top for a long time. I remember even saying this whenever the movies like came out, when the Barbenheimer thing was happening, like, both of these movies are going to get recognized, but it's clear which one's going to win all the awards. And I didn't have a problem with that. It's just, that's what's going to happen. And it did.
Yeah. And you never know. And let's see, it's 20. So in 5 years, we might look back and do the same that we're doing in 2019. You know, of course, right now we're like, well, people don't know Poor Things, there's Zone of Interest. But in 5 years, we may look back and be like, oh my gosh, that movie, you know, once it gets out on streaming and once people start watching it and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably have conversations in the future about how Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win anything. You know, I'm sure that's going to happen. We give ourselves time. And as more people, I mean, Anatomy of a Fall, I think, just hit Hulu this week. Like, as more people get the opportunity to see Anatomy of a Fall, a movie that won Best Original Screenplay, it's in French and sometimes German and a little bit of English. Like, you know, I think that just as these movies get in front of more eyeballs, you'll see like how great that crop of Best Picture nominees was. I just thought it was overall a really good year for the Oscars.
Probably, I think, the best since 2019. I would say.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, Oscars and even movies as a whole.
I think the 2023 Academy Awards were good too. I think that I enjoyed a lot of the films nominated for Best Picture,
especially Elvis.
I thought some of them were legitimately bad, but you know that happens dang. With every year.
Last year was pretty stacked, dude.
Last year was pretty good, but there was another thing. It was another inevitable thing. I mean, Everything Everywhere All at Once, like from the moment. It was like a month before the Oscars and started winning everything at all the award shows. And so then you're like, well, that's going to win Best Picture. And so then it kind of just, you know, it changes your perspective on things because then you're trying to figure out what's second, you know? People are going to look back and be like, how did Top Gun Maverick not win? You know, how did the Banshees of Inisherin not win?
Well, I was going to say that was happened with the Banshees of Inisherin. It was nominated for 9 and won none of them. Like it 9 or 10, I think, and it didn't win a single Oscar. And it was like, dang, okay. And but there's a lot of good movies, you know?
I haven't had a lot of, like, and I think some of these things die down, and maybe it'll take a couple of years for these movies to ramp back up again. But have you had a lot of Everything Everywhere All at Once conversations? Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, any of those movies from that year, I don't know that we've talked about that much, but I think maybe in 5 years we'll start to cycle back around because it's been long enough that people will get back into it, or whenever the new Avatar, whenever Avatar 3 comes out.
Yeah. Which now I did just recently watch All Quiet on the Western Front, and that is a beautiful movie. Mm-hmm. I really do like it. It's just very well shot. And I've been wanting to watch Banshees of Inisherin, if that means anything. I haven't, so maybe that just still is proving the point. But I've been like, I kind of want to watch that again. So,
Yeah. All right, let's focus back on 2024. Barbie didn't win anything. I think that I expected that to happen. I mean, they won Best Song, which I think is the most sham Oscar award ever.
I'm Just Ken got snubbed.
I think the Dua Lipa song that was in Barbie was better than the Billie Eilish song, and I'm saying that as a person who used to be a really big fan of Billie Eilish. I think it's a victim of several things. First, it's the Oscars just don't generally award comedies like that. I think second is the fact that, you know, it was just running into some really heavy hitters. Like Gosling didn't have a chance in Best Supporting. Production design, like Poor Things, it's really difficult, you know. If Poor Things doesn't come out, I think a lot of the below the line awards that Poor Things won are all Barbies, you know. And so that's just it ran into things. I think the only thing that I was mad about was the fact that Barbie was considered in Best Adapted Screenplay. It's not an adapted screenplay.
Yeah, I heard that. I was like, what is it? I mean,
Barbie dolls exist, but that's like an original. So here's what I don't. So May, December was nominated in original screenplay. May, December was written by Sammy Birch and is largely based on a real life story between a teacher. I'm forgetting the name of the scandal because I was not alive when it happened. A teacher and her young student that then became a couple and later married. And after she went to jail, they like reunited and married. Like almost beat for beat is the exact same.
Mary Kay Letourneau.
Yeah, Mary Kay Letourneau. That is considered best original. That is considered an original story that is clearly based on other stories, firsthand accounts of something that actually happened. Probably, I'm going to go out on a limb and say news articles and everything. It's based on that. That's an original story. But yeah, Barbie, because there is a Barbie doll, is now an adapted screenplay. How does that make sense?
Yeah, May, December, it says it's The Guardian. It's just the first thing that pops up. Rolling Stone mentions it. But loosely based on the real-life events of Mary Kay Letourneau, a 34-year-old teacher who victimized her 12-year-old student, Vili Falou, in 1996, becoming a tabloid fixture.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the movie is it's based on that real life story. Like, I'm not saying that maybe that should be an adaptive, but if that's considered an original, how's Barbie not? There's just a Barbie dolls exist. So all of the stuff that Greta Gerwig wrote, which is like, I don't know. Give me another person who could have written that movie besides Gerwig and Baumbach.
David Fincher. I'm kidding.
It's a very different film, but like, that's an original. She's not.
I do want to know what is considered an adapted screenplay.
I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, I want
to. Yeah, it's supposed to be like just based off any original work, which is normally a novel or a film, a short, newspaper articles, things of that nature. I just don't know how Barbie fits into that category in any way, shape, or form. And so I think it was put in the wrong spot and then had no chance to win in that spot. I think that if you look at it, you're like, Barbie's not a great adaptation because it's an original. It's a great original screenplay. It's not a great
adaptation. So you're saying Barbie and May December should have switched.
I that would be my argument, yes.
Yeah.
And I think that Barbie has a chance, although I thought that Anatomy Fall screenplay, I know you haven't seen it yet. I thought that was excellent. But I thought Barbie was excellent too, so at least it would have been more of a race and allowed Barbie to compete for that award. So
yeah, you like the film a lot more, but I wasn't, and you may not have been either. I wasn't surprised that it didn't win any of them. What I know you're talking about that one. What like was one or even two? You're like, I'm actually surprised it didn't win that. Are there some? Or
I wasn't really surprised by any of them. I think the ones that I thought like it maybe should have won. I mean, I think it could have split with Poor Things. Like that, the Barbie Land set was pretty impressive. And I think that it, production design was like something they really cared about in that film. And so I would have liked to have seen it win there. I think costumes were great too, but I understand Poor Things is, I understand why it's being awarded there. I just think that Poor Things is production design was maybe a little bit flashier than Barbie's in a way. But Barbie's, I think, was more true, like really grounded you in that world, as weird as it was, and grounded you by not grounding you. Like that Barbie Land was supposed to feel so superficial and plastic and fake. Mm-hmm. That was like the whole point of it, and I think they achieved that perfectly. And there's a world in which that movie looks really stupid, because they just do a bad job of that, and it's just like a pink house in a normal neighborhood, and you're like, this looks dumb. But I think that they did such a good job of that. So maybe production design, but again, like she wouldn't have won Best Director even if she was nominated. And I don't think Gosling should have won Best Supporting. And I don't think America Ferrera should have even been nominated for Best Supporting. And
it's just it's a Scorsese. It's like that was just an unlucky year. You're just a gauntlet of things.
Yeah.
Not to bring back Oppenheimer, but I was actually surprised genuinely that Oppenheimer didn't get production design. Just like knowing that like building that entire town, like they kind of rebuilt that town out there where the Trinity test was. And I know that like actually blowing up a bomb isn't technically production design, but the set of creating that. And like, I just feel like they did a lot with that. And I was actually a little surprised that they didn't win production design.
I think Poor Things production design was great, but it's creating its own world. And I think you get more credit for that.
Got you.
Whereas they're basing it off of reality and Poor Things is inventing something. Yes, it's obviously basing it off of fictures of reality. It's supposed to be like this late 19th, early 20th century story. So that's like where you're getting a lot of the kind of initial ideas from. But it's clearly expanding on that. And I think it's just getting more credit for that. It's just getting more credit for creating a new world rather than copying. Recreating is what I should say. An already established, something that happened in history.
Got you. Okay. So.
All right, David, let's talk about the actual telecast real quick before we're actually going to move on. I forgot to say this in the intro, but we're gonna have a little NFL free agency talk at the end, so we'll do a couple more minutes, but I want to talk about the telecast first. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was good. I thought his monologue was solid. Some funny jokes. The only thing that made me uncomfortable was I don't know whether RDJ enjoyed the jokes at his expense. Maybe seemed like he got a little upset by them, and so was kind of trying to move on there. I did think the Cena awards presentation was hilarious. I thought John Cena has great comedic timing. I think the way he delivered, like, as you can see, costumes are very important as he's attempting to cover himself with an awards envelope. Mm-hmm. That was great. And then John Mulaney was hilarious explaining the plot of Field of Dreams. I thought it was great. And I'm Just Ken, I think, was a highlight of the night. That was the perfect performance. Gosling actually sang that and sang it really well while doing all that choreography.
He's just so freaking cool, dude. He's just so cool.
Yeah, and he got Emma Stone involved. He got Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie involved. And all the other Kens were on stage. Everybody was clapping. It was just a really good, like, Oscars bit. So,
yeah, I had a good time. I would agree with, I was like, oh, I know it's tough. Like, how do I know who to poke fun at and who not to poke fun at? But Robert Downey Jr. was definitely like, dude, really?
Yeah, he's like, shut up, move on.
So I understand the balance of him. Like, okay, I make fun of everyone. Where do I draw the line? Who do I draw the line for? I kind of get mm-hmm. that.
And there's normally one or two of those that's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I thought they cut to Messi the dog an appropriate amount of times. I was happy about that. Also, the
did you see the behind the hand, the behind the scenes picture of the
yes.
stage yeah, guy well, holding the legs? I was going to
mention like, that. Yeah, whenever Messi was clapping and they cut and Ryan Gosling just is looking at the screen and he sees the dog clapping, he goes, oh, he's clapping.
I thought it was real for a second. And Sophie was like, David, there's no way. I'm like, yeah, that's probably.
I don't know. That dog could pretend to be dead. So it's, I mean, yeah, there's no limit. Maybe he's got that talent in him. Honestly. Don't know. I just thought it was a really good telecast. There weren't really any uncomfortable, like really awkward bits. I think that the one that maybe didn't super work for everybody was the Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito one where they were making Batman references.
I love that.
And the
that
only
one,
reason
bro.
It didn't work for people was because I was at an Oscars watch party and nobody heard the beginning of it, which I picked up on the context clues, but nobody heard the beginning. And they were like, really? Why are we showing Michael Keaton all of a sudden? And like, cutting back and forth, and then those people also hadn't seen the original Batman movies, and so I thought that was good. Pacino definitely either ignored instructions to read all the nominees or was told by the producers just get to it right away, and so there was like no fanfare. He just read Best Picture. He went like, and the winner of Best Picture, Oppenheimer, and like people were like half applauding because they didn't know if he was supposed to. He was gonna like keep reading, or
he actually came out today and said something. He said that the producers told him to just read it because the nominees had been listed throughout the show. Yeah. That's what he said. He's
which
like,
is kind of what I thought. It just, the line delivery was pretty awkward and there was no like,
yeah. And my, he's like, and I gotta it. gotta go to the envelope for that. And my yeah. eyes see Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Which is right? just really weird. He could have just said, and the winner of Best Picture is like, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought it
went well.
I thought they did a good job of not doing that many filmed bits either. I don't even know if like there's normally a lot of film skits at the Oscars and they're all almost always painful. And they didn't do that this year. And so I thought that was good. Kimmel made enough jokes about the movies where you could like, you know, it's clear that he watched them and he kind of enjoyed them, but they weren't too inside baseball. I just thought it was good. It was a good time.
Yeah. He made one joke and I thought it was funny. They showed like, I think it was when Poor Things nomination for Best Picture finished. And he's like, oh, those are about the only clips we can show from that movie that are age appropriate. And it flashed to Emma Stone and she was not happy. She was really upset. I was like, you'll be fine. It's
I think that's your own fault. I think she was playing it up to the crowd. I think she knew that.
Oh, you
I
think mean, so?
Yeah. Emma Stone is not wearing clothes in a significant portion of that movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just overall thought it was a really good Oscars, and then it was done early. Like, we weren't just – the worst is when an award show drones on when you know what's going to happen. Like, we knew Best Picture was going to go to Oppenheimer. So if we had to wait another 45 minutes for that, like, we should have a previous award show when they just keep dragging it out and out and out. I thought that was good. So
I do have a question. How come this might be how they always do it. I thought it was weird they did Best Male Actor, Best Director – Best Actress, Best Picture.
I think they switch it based on what race is more exciting, honestly. I think that maybe, if I remember what's correctly, closer? Everything Everywhere, Michelle Yeoh, that was also the nomination. That was also the win before Best Picture. That was the award given out before Best Picture.
I think they do male actor and actress together, and then director is like, oh yeah, director, and then Best Picture, you know?
I think they try to separate director and picture for some reason with the acting categories, and I think they just determine it based on like which race is more exciting, because we all knew Best Actor was going to Cillian Murphy. I think there was a moment in time when Giamatti had a chance, but that would have long since passed. And so I think that they just saved actress because it was like the exciting one, and there have been times where they've tried to do it where Best Picture went out before to do, like they did this famously in 2020 whenever they tried to move Best Picture before Best Actor because they were going to have a dramatic at the end of the show, give it posthumously to Chadwick Boseman, except they flubbed it because Anthony Hopkins won instead of Chadwick Boseman. So it was just really awkward that that was last. I think they maybe learned their lesson and they're never going to do that again. It's going to be Best Picture, even if it's an inevitable Best Picture, and they're not going to change it. So
I mean, it makes sense. It's the most prestigious award a feature film can get, period. So like end the night with that, you know?
Yeah.
But no, that's exciting. I was counting here. So Oppenheimer won 7 Oscars, Poor Things won 4, and Zone of Interest won 2, and then everything else got 1. Oppenheimer kind of dominated, then Poor Things got kind of those other ones. I think Poor Things probably won what people thought it would with like the makeup and hair and production and costumes. Yeah, so like you said, not many surprises, but overall I enjoyed really it. It was a good show.
I enjoyed it, yeah. All right, David, are you ready to dive into something even wilder and weirder than Poor Things, and that is the NFL free agency market right now?
Yeah, I guess. Is it? Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So let's do it. First, I think we'll give out the – well, actually, let's give out some awards, David. Saddest trade of NFL free agency / trading season, whatever you want to call it. Mac Jones to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a 6th-round pick. Anytime you are a 1st-round pick and then you don't even get a second contract before you are traded for a pick that is at the end of the draft, not good. What do you think that means for the Justin Fields market? Do you think he gets like two, like a 4th and a 6th? What do you think he gets?
It's not looking great, which I was almost surprised. Like I think. I'm kind of on the field of like, I think they should keep Justin Fields. I'm kind of on that vibe because like he's kind of been surrounded by just dog water, and like he's not been like great, but like I think someone even did a side-by-side like statistics between him and Lamar this year, and they were eerily like kind of close. Like it, so I think there is this kind of weird narrative that like Justin Fields is just bad, and I don't think he's bad. I think surrounded by the right pieces, he could be pretty good. Like if in at the Falcons, like he has. You know, Raheem Morris is a young coach and experienced guy, but he's surrounded by like good skill position players, and
right.
I think he could have success, but I don't know. I'm not a pro, so if I don't know what I'm talking about, I don't know what I'm talking about. But clearly, a lot of these GMs and coaches, they don't really like him, or someone would have traded for him by now. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's being argued that Chicago is going to take a quarterback. They're taking Caleb Williams. They're taking Caleb Williams 1 overall. I don't think there's really any question about that anymore. But if they give Justin Fields a year to sit and be backup, that his drafts or his stock might actually raise, just because, you know, there's so many quarterbacks in this draft right now. I think a lot of teams that are struggling in that position aren't really going to be willing to trade for a quarterback that seems like a project already when they can get one in the draft. And so maybe wait a year, see what happens. And if Fields is still available on the market and there's teams that need him, they could, you know, they could try to snag him. Okay, our next award, David, is for Best Bag Securer. The only nominee and the runaway winner of this is Kirk Cousins, who, coming off a torn Achilles injury, has signed a 4-year, $180 million contract with the Atlanta Falcons. I would like to remind people that Kirk Cousins has now, after this $180 million contract hits, his career earnings will be north of $411 million. And he also was playing on an entirely guaranteed contract in Minnesota, one of the first and only of its kind. Kirk Cousins' agent is great. That man is amazing.
36-year-old off a Achilles injury, and he just signed that. He's got
a 4-year, $180 million contract.
But, I mean, honestly, I think the Falcons are going to be really good. I do think they're kind of a quarterback away. You have Kyle Pitts, and you have Bijan Robinson, and you have
really good.
Who's the other? Oh my gosh, other receiver. I'm blanking. He's really good too.
I mean, I think for the Falcons, first, let's not act like this is a historically great franchise. So I think that making the playoffs and winning playoff games for them is very important.
Drake London.
There you go. So I understand this move. They're in a win now mode just because they have all the skill players that they would need after you listed them for like 45 seconds. You know, they have so many. This makes sense. It's crazy to pay Kirk Cousins $180 million to lose in the divisional round, you know, but they'll win that division because they're also going to play in the weakest division in football. David, what would you give the award to craziest trade or signing? What would you say that is so far?
The first thing that comes to mind, not crazy like in a bad way, but the Dolphins signing Christian Wilkins for like $120 million. So they have like him now and Max Crosby on the same defensive line. That's kind of wild. Like that's a big move. They're obviously like intentional with what they're trying to do because they're trying to beat the Chiefs, which makes sense as a division rival. But like, I was like, whoa, I was not expecting for them to pay a massive deal to someone when they already have like a really good player at that position. So they're loading up. I wasn't expecting that at all.
I mean, they want Wilkins, I think, to, you know, kind of shore up the biggest hole that they had in their defense. Was they just couldn't stop anybody from getting yards in the interior of the field. They were an absolute liability in that area. And so Wilkins is a great defensive tackle. That's what they're hoping for.
I just saw this. Sorry, breaking news.
Break it.
Willie Gay just signed with the Saints. 1 year, $5 million deal.
That does not shock me.
Which part of me is like, $5 million? Like, I wonder, could we have signed him for that?
We could have paid that. But think they didn't really care about keeping Willie Gay around. Which is, you know, they need to get more speed on the interior of the defense now. But I'm sure they will. They have a plan for that. I don't really doubt that if the Chiefs wanted to match that, I'm sure Willie Gay reached out to them and they probably said, nope, take it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Take that $5 million deal. So, and just continues the long history of Chiefs defenders winning a Super Bowl and then going to play for the Saints the next year, which is a weird trend that's happening.
That's a really good point, actually.
For me, I don't know that it's super surprising, but I mean, Russell Wilson signed with the Steelers. I think we have to talk about that. So that was a team that often people were pointing to as a quarterback away. They had an absolute offensive liability this season in their offensive coordinator, and first of all, who many people considered a football terrorist. But also just Kenny Pickett was not good. And then they had to play Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph, and none of those options were getting it done. I don't know. Like, I don't... They needed to do this because if they didn't get a quarterback, they're running the risk of falling way behind in this division and they already had the worst quarterback. But I think they may have gone from having the worst quarterback in the division to having the third worst quarterback in the division. No, they definitely went from that. And so this will maybe help the Steelers get a wild card spot, but I don't consider this team a serious threat to either a healthy Bengals team or the Ravens.
Yeah, to me, it's like it doesn't hurt. Like they're only playing $1.5 million. They play in the minimum, and the Broncos are paying the rest. So I'm kind of like,
this is a why not do
sure,
it.
Sure, might as well
if you can do it. And you know, I mean, Tomlin has a way of getting guys under control, it seems. And so, you know, I know that Russell had a lot of stories about him the year previous, and then it was kind of everybody flipped on him and was on his side whenever they saw the way Sean Payton was treating him. I think that it's a decent match if you want somebody to match the personality. I think Tomlin is a good fit for him. And yeah, you're right. I mean, and I guess that was a derogatory thing for me to say about the Steelers. They're not going to go far, but not many teams are, unless you have a generational quarterback. And so what you have to do if you don't have that is just try to get to the playoffs. And I think that this move will make it so the Steelers can get to the playoffs. If, and this is a big if, TJ Watt can be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen that.
Because at the end of the day, that's what that defense relies on. And if that doesn't happen, then it doesn't matter who they get a quarterback. So,
yeah, and honestly, like, he didn't play awful last year. I think he had 24 touchdowns and like 7 picks. Like, that's not bad.
No, he played okay. He wasn't the problem in Denver. That's for sure.
Nathan, how do I want to word this? I want to go to running back free agency Because that's kind of been like the, it's been like the biggest running back free agency in years.
Eagles, Derrick Henry.
What has been your favorite signing? You got DeAndre Swift to the Bears. You got Saquon to the Eagles. You have Joe Mixon traded to the Texans. You've got Tony Pollard to the Titans. You mentioned Derrick Henry to the Ravens.
I think if they can use Derrick Henry as more of a committee back and not have to have him carry the crazy workload that he always carries. People forget Derrick Henry had a really good year last year. The Titans were bad overall, but he was not really. He had 1,100 yards still. So I think that if they can get similar production from him on that team this year, that they have a problem with injuries. And so anything you can do to shore that up, I think Derrick Henry makes a lot of sense in that offense. And they knew who they are. Their identity is running the football. It's an identity they got away from in the AFC Championship game, which is why they didn't get to play in the Super Bowl. And if they stick with that identity, Derrick Henry is going to help them do that. I think that's a very smart signing by them.
Yeah. Jordan Poyer just signed with the Dolphins. So he's saying a lot of staying in the division this year. I forgot another running back. Aaron Jones went from the Packers to the Vikings. You're just about to mention Patrick Queen went from the Ravens to the Steelers. That's interesting. I think there's even a couple more that we're missing. So
I mean, the biggest interdivision one has been Saquon, who went to the Eagles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saquon's very good running back. I just don't really know if that was the problem with the Eagles, but the running game having a good running game can't hurt them. But they got a lot of questions on defense that they haven't answered yet.
And their head coach. I mean, that's just pretty glaring, I think, when that security guy gets banned for the rest of the year, and then there's legitimate reports that come out that with him, his security guard kind of controlling him. Like, he got multiple altercations with coaches and players after he was suspended for the rest of the year. Like, that's pretty telling to me. So I could be wrong, but I think they have a Sirianni problem, not necessarily something else. What else? Daniel Hunter signed with the Texans. So Daniel Hunter now goes to the Texans, who has Will Anderson already. Texans have gotten Joe Mixon, Dalton Schultz, Jeff Okuna, that Ohio State cornerback. What's your worry level with the Texans? One being I'm not concerned whatsoever. 10 being like they stand the greatest path to, you know, bump the Chiefs out of another Super Bowl appearance. Like, where are you sitting with that?
6. I think that there's a reason to, I don't know, there's worry. They're clearly making a lot of moves and they want to, they are in a win now mode. I think they were, after seeing the season that Stroud had, they're like, okay, well, we have that question answered. So now we just need to get guys. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's accelerate.
They have a lot of cap space, which helps.
Let's figure this out. Yeah. And so they're not really focused on, they're now just focused on winning now because they feel like they can. They have a window now with CJ Stroud before he is going to command a massive contract, and they're not going to have the money to sign a lot of these guys. So I think it's very smart. I think they're obviously the front runners in that division again. I think they could be contenders, but it's the AFC. Like, if this was an NFC team, I'd say that they could be borderline like favorites, you know, to make an NFC championship game. But in the AFC, like, that's great. You got a lot of skill guys. That's fantastic.
Colts, Jags.
That's good. You just got to go through the Bills and the Ravens and the Bengals. Yeah. And then if you can get through that, you got to get through the Grim Reaper. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I think they have to do this, and I think it's good moves, but I'm not really going to be like super concerned right away.
I can't believe I'm forgetting the last team in the division. Colts, Jags, Texans.
Titans.
Who are, I always forget about the Titans,
going to be in last place this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's tough. And Mike Vrabel's not even on a team still. That's surprising. Him and Bill Belichick just aren't coaching, which I really didn't think that those two would, you know, be a free agent as long as they have been. So, anything else? I'm trying to like remember if there's been anything else worth
just real
about.
Real quick before we're done, because we're hitting the over an hour mark. So, do you expect the Chiefs to sign a wide receiver? I think that's been the big question. Do you expect them to sign a wide receiver in free agency, or do you think it'll be yet and again another year where we expect them to do something and they don't really do it? because they already kind of made their biggest acquisition, which is just a reacquisition. They signed a massive Chris Jones contract. That's what they were focused on. That's
well, and I'm happy, but with as big a deal that is, that prevented us from being able to do much else. Chris Jones kind of sucked up the rest of the money that we had. We signed Irv Smith Jr., a pretty athletic tight end from the Bengals, who's a free agent. I thought we were going to sign a receiver, but then when Darnell Mooney signed a 3-year, $39 million deal with the Falcons, I think I even texted this. I'm like, I don't think Chiefs are signing a receiver now. Like, Mooney was kind of low. Mooney was kind of, I mean, he's below like Hollywood Brown. He's below T. Higgins. He's below these guys, Calvin Ridley, Michael Pittman, and he's getting $26 million guaranteed in 3 years. Like, I think I saw, maybe even TJ said this, that's as much as Travis Kelce's making. So the Chiefs absolutely are not going to pay that much. And if Mooney's making that much, I just don't know if there's another receiver left on the board worth paying for. So they may roll with the, you know, athletic tight ends, draft another receiver. I mean, draft another, receiver and call it.
And they have
year.
Been told
we'll
that this is, and we've been told this multiple times, that this is one of the best receiver crops of the last decade in the draft. And so it's likely that the Chiefs may try to trade up. They may use Snead as, because it seems like Snead's gone. I mean, they've obviously franchise tagged him, but it seems pretty obvious that they're not really going to get a deal done there. So they're going to try to trade him. They might see if they can trade Snead on the tag for maybe moving up in the draft and getting one of those prize receivers at the top. I don't think that'll net. I don't think Snead's good enough to get them all the way up to maybe some of the heights that we'd like. I mean, they're not getting Marvin Harrison Jr., but if they can get a top five guy in the draft, that might really help them. So it's possible that that's what they're looking to do.
Well, and I know he just recently actually said he'd love to stay in KC. So I know there's $7 million over the cap, and that counts like his $19 million tag hit. It counts with that. So maybe they're getting, like you said, maybe if they trade even him away for picks, now they'll have a little bit of money. They can sign someone. I think the only way if they don't sign him is if they can still sign him to like a long-term contract, which then would save them money, right? Because a tag is a one-year fully guaranteed contract, whereas if it's a long-term contract, it might be like, 10, 12 guaranteed, but you have incentives built in which don't go against the cap, or signing bonuses don't go against the cap, which I don't necessarily know how that works or why that is, but I just know that that's the case. So, but then you wouldn't have that solved at receiver next necessarily. You'd just be dependent on another rookie. So I don't know. They're in a tough spot, but
you've got to think that a lot of the young guys that you had playing a lot are getting a year older. They're a year better. It's true. Did sign the new tight end. And so is it more important to just make sure you still have a top defense again and then count on Mahomes to be able to turn it around with these guys? Or do you think you need to add there? I think that's the question that Beach is going to answer. And we do still have the draft. Like, everybody's acting like, oh, well, they didn't get this, you're not going to get him. Like, there's a draft still. So there's still time to get things done. One last thing, David, and then we will be done, I promise. And this might be the funniest story of all time. I just saw this right before we started podcasting. Aaron Rodgers is being heavily considered as the vice president running mate for Robert Kennedy Jr. In the fall. And that was a story from the New York Times that he has had numerous conversations with RFK Jr. And they have been talking a lot about the vice president role for him on the ticket. One, just we're in the weirdest timeline ever. What the frick? Why is this the case? And two, it would be the funniest thing ever if Aaron Rodgers made this whole big deal about going to the Jets, and then he comes back from this Achilles tear and immediately leaves to go run in a presidential campaign, of which, by the way, if anybody has been paying attention, has no hope of winning and actually becoming vice president.
Robert Kennedy is not going to win.
Right. So I just thought you should hear that just in case you hadn't seen that story.
That's incredible.
But I don't know. I'm kind of rooting for him to go try to be a vice president just because I think that would be the funniest possible NFL story in maybe the last 20 years. I don't. That's
that crazy. Would be. Can you imagine Robert Kennedy Jr. as president, Aaron Rodgers vice president?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers has to fly to a international peace summit and talk to other world leaders And he's going to be like, you know, I just, it's, this is a lot like just reading his own blitz.
Bro, I'm fully convinced that would make like Trump look like a normal politician. Because I know when he was running, it was like this random guy, this random businessman's going. Yeah, got, but if Robert Kennedy and Aaron Rodgers were in office.
Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback who's real fond of doing ayahuasca and sitting in a dark room for 3 days.
So create a holiday, like a darkness retreat holiday that you have to honor.
We're in the weirdest timeline. There's nothing I can say.
I saw Steph Curry was asked about it. He said he would consider running for president after he retired if it meant he could like create real change or something like that. So
yeah, here's as a person who loves Steph Curry as a basketball player, here's what I don't want: more people who are just famous being like, I'll just run for president. I think we've had enough of that in our time.
Well, so I know. We've had conversations. I know around when like Kanye was considering it, you were actually kind of liking
what the thing. Yeah, this is just David's fan fiction working overtime. Yeah, I definitely I do not support anything Kanye West does. Really, from College Dropout on, I think.
Didn't The Rock? I think The
say
Rock
he wanted to run for president too. Yeah, I don't want that. As I don't want that either. I don't. Yeah. I just don't. And yeah, I don't know.
Right before I tie a bow on this beautiful present, I want you to tell me, looking across the landscape of Hollywood, not who would be your favorite president, who would like be like the best option in Hollywood right now to run for president. Like, who do you think would legitimately like actually?
So I don't have to just pick actors, right? I can pick other people.
Directors, I guess if you know like a film editor.
You know what? Give me Steven Spielberg, and I'll tell you why.
Ooh.
Okay. Steven Spielberg, a person who, you know, was not born to incredibly wealthy means. He's kind of a self-made man who, by all accounts, is a very respectful, nice, and decent human being who cares about others and cares about what's good. And this is most important, he made Jurassic Park. And so I think that's all the qualifications maybe I would see. If I have to pick someone from Hollywood, I'm going to go with my guy Steve.
No, I respect that. But Nathan, the only problem with you saying that is it kind of makes you part of the problem. You want to know why?
Why?
Steven is 77 years old.
That's true. That's true.
You had a chance to choose. So.
I would say like, I don't know. I tried to pick somebody who was electable. You know, I think Steven Spielberg could get elected because enough people know who he is. You're thinking right now about Christopher Nolan. He's British. No one's going to do that.
He's kind of old, but like a Denzel Washington. Like
Denzel would be a good one. Yeah, no, actually.
He's actually not terribly, like compared to what we have now, he's pretty young. Current president, he's like 57 or 58 baby. Or something.
Yeah, he's a toddler. You know what? No, I think I'm going to go with Ryan Gosling. And I think I'm
just, I thought about that.
Yeah, just a Ken-dom. Just make America a Ken-dom. And I'm sure that'll go well. There'll be no problems. So, yeah, let's do that.
That was a fun question. I just thought about that. So
yeah, it's great.
It's a good way to end. Oscar talk and free agency frenzy, as NFL Network has been labeling it. It's been fun. It was a really good award shows. We'll keep watching movies and, we'll talk a little bit of sports, like probably maybe after the draft, but then it's kind of going to be, you know, movies, and we might do some top 10 lists. We haven't done that in a while.
Talk about, you know, food and paintings and cheese plates, you know,
just Danny DeVito or all of our interests. Whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, no, it's going to be fun. So, appreciate you for listening if you've stuck around this long, and we've given you some things to watch. So, do that, and we will talk to y'all next week.
Deuces, my dudes.